Okay. You get the idea, right? You get the idea. Okay. No. No. Let me ask you, what is the issue that they were arguing about? Now, I tell you, he got this video from his Ring doorbell. He didn't let the guy in, but he recorded the whole thing. Yeah. And I just got a kick ass laughing and laughing. But it tells you the classic problem with the six blind men trying to describe that. They're looking at the situation from totally different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And the guy who was talking here was actually very sincere in his arguments. He really believed it. He really believed that he made sense. So what I did is I Googled, because this is in the UK, I Googled if it's illegal to use another person's Wi-Fi in the UK, because it is here. It's the same in the UK. You can't use somebody else's Wi-Fi, it's illegal. But in his mind, in his mind, he was the one who was the aggrieved party.
Yeah, he was only using what came out of the walls.
Yeah, that's public. Anything that came out of the walls is public, and he can use it. So tell me, what's the problem here? What was the problem?
They were looking at the problem two different ways.
They were looking at it from two different ways, from their point of view. But one, you know, when you have a conflict between two people, it's either one of them is right, or the other one is right, or both are wrong.
There you go. Yes,
true. Or what usually is the case is there's a little bit of truth here, there's a little bit of truth here, but then you still have a conflict going on because both of them see that the other person is wrong. And they're right. Like, and it's all a matter of perspective, okay? If I tell you, okay, what do you see? You see a hand. What else do you see in that hand? You say five fingers. What else? You see a watch. What else? You see a thumb. You see fingernails. I don't see any fingernails. You know. But you do, and that is why I use this illustration a lot.
Yes.
I use this illustration a lot because conflicts may be due to differences in points of view. It's the classic illustration of the six blind men trying to describe the elephant. And one blind man grabbed hold of the ear and he says, the elephant is flat, it's like a fan. And then another grabbed hold of the tusk and says, no, the elephant is pointed, just like a spear. And then one grabbed hold of the, what do you call that, the trunk, and says, oh, the elephant is cylindrical, like a snake, you know, and so on and so forth. Let me ask you the question, are they wrong or right?
They're right.
But they're also wrong. In what ways are they right? Well, they're describing the part of the elephant that they perceive. What ways are they wrong?
They don't see the whole
elephant. See? But they're insisting that that's the whole elephant. The whole elephant is flat. That's what one of them is insisting. The elephant is flat. That's what they're insisting. The elephant is flat, but not all of the elephant is flat. And that's where arguments come from. Now, it gets a little bit more tricky this way. If, for example, one of those six blind men had more power than the others.
Yes.
If one of them had more power than the others, now they can force the others to adopt their point of view even though it's wrong, and the others know it's wrong, but they have no choice. So you see a lot of intimidation, and force and coercion and discrimination. And you see a lot of that manipulative actions and behavior. Why? Why? Because we're broken, sinful people. And there would always be that tendency in us to think that the elephant is flat. Because that's the part that we see. And we're not really entirely wrong. We become wrong when we insist that that's all the elephant. Now, let me ask you this question. Is there anyone who sees the whole elephant? Is there anyone?
God does.
God does. There you go. God sees the whole elephant. And see, that's the problem. Not everybody's connected with God. If everyone was connected with God, just like in the very beginning, before Adam and Eve sinned, there is no problem. Because everybody sees reality the way God sees it, and God sees everything. But because man became independent and declared himself independent of God, now he has this problem. And he doesn't get along with other people. Why? Because he doesn't see the whole elephant, but he insists that he does. And that's where, generally, conflicts come from. So that's why it's tricky, because you're not entirely wrong, but in a way you are, when you insist that your point of view is the only point of view. Okay. So, yes.
But this isn't to say that truth is relative.
No, it's not. In fact, there is truth.
There is truth.
God sees it.
Right, because we would often have conflicts. Yes, we had conflicts about what to do in raising our girls. I want to do this.
Yes.
I want to take this action. She wants to take. So that was where a lot of conflict came.
Yes.
But that's where there wasn't a truth.
And that's why it's always going to be a process to look at life from God's point of view. Because that's not going to be, oh, I see God's point of view. Oh, I don't see God's point of view. No, usually it's a process of maturity that you become more and more like Christ, meaning you see the world more and more the way God sees the world. But people get there in not at the same time. Not everybody gets there at the same time. And sometimes it's a process. And that's why God gave us each other, because now, going back to this illustration, okay? Let's go back to this illustration. Is there a way for all of them to be able to see the whole elephant? Yes, there is. If they all get along and listen to each other, then they can describe the whole elephant. But if they refuse to do that, there's no way you can see the whole elephant.
Unless they take the time, each one to walk all the way around and carefully touch every part that they walk around.
Yes, yes. And that's why it requires relationship to be able to do that, and trust. Because they say, hey, come on over and get a hold of what I'm experiencing.
Yes.
But if the other person doesn't, hey, no, I already know the elephant, then there's no way they're going to be able to see what the other person sees.
That's why we need to read the whole counsel of God.
Well, that's why we need to listen to God
more
and more. So, yes, they can see the whole elephant if they're willing to listen to one another. But selfish human beings don't want to do that. Yeah, yes, Casey.
Is that real blind people, they do have great listening skills. They're incredible listeners because they've lost one sense.
Yes.
They're heightened in awareness of another sense. So most blind people, they would go around the entire elephant and see everything.
Yes, yes.
That is their nature. I think this cartoon is kind of a blind way of looking.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a limited illustration. It's a limited illustration. We don't have to extend the analogy all over the place, but you get the point. You get the point. And that's the only point that this is trying to make, is that yes, different people have different points of views, and yes, we don't always see other people's point of views because we're broken, and in some ways we are not perfect. We're in many ways we are blind to what other people's experience. Because when you think about it, a person living in another part of the world will have a totally different experience than yours. And that is your cultural background. You will have a certain filter by which you filter information that you get from the world. And everybody has them. It's not necessarily wrong or right, it's just different. But we have to understand its nature, it's limited. And so when you look at the global scale, that's what people are struggling and fighting about.
Yes. I also think, Pastor Vince, depending on how you're, it's cultural, but depending on how you're raised.
Yes.
You tend to really believe that your parents did it the right way. Instinctively, that's a good thing. So yes. You'll follow their lead, but then when you get a little bit older, it's just, oh, my mom cooked it simply.
Yeah, like, yeah, oh, yes. You know what's even ironic is that some people, they hate the way their parents raised them, but they end up exactly like their parents.
That's right. They probably wouldn't admit it.
They won't admit it, but that's what happens.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes, Daniel.
Yeah. For example, my wife is from Philippines, Pampanga, and she grew up in that culture, and they have a certain culture.
Totally different cultures. Totally different.
And so, quite different from time to time, but because we know the Lord, there's a lot of oneness. But where there's the differences show up, I have to be patient, kind, gentle, forbearing, and so that she, and that helps.
And that's why we need Jesus.
That's right.
That's why we need Jesus, not just in a micro level in interpersonal relationships, but in a global level. And now you understand why Jesus says, go into all the world and make disciples of all nations. Because unless that happens, they're not going to get along. Unless that happens. Someday it will happen, but I don't know how long that's going to take. But in the meantime, anyway, here's a general principle, okay? How do you maintain healthy boundaries? As you relate to other blind people, strive to have a healthy self-respect and respect for others. So you respect yourself and your rights and your opinions, but you also have to respect other people. Ideally, the exercise of your rights should not be harmful to others, as the exercise of their rights should not be harmful to you. Ideally, that's what. But in reality, that's not what happens. That's why you have wars. Because people believe that for me to exist, I have to destroy you. And that's where the problem lies. But healthy boundaries are like this. I get along with you, you get along with me, I treat you with respect, you treat me with respect. We're good. And if people strive to maintain that, then you would minimize conflict. But unfortunately, there's that selfish nature in every person that insists on their point of view. And so now you see where there's conflict between parent and children. How come? The children feel that their parents that they're at a disadvantage because their parents have power and they don't. So now they rebel. Or husband and wife, for example, whoever holds the purse holds the power. And the person who holds the purse will feel that I have a right to get my way because I'm the one who makes the money. and keeps this family going. So a lot of those misconceptions go on in a person's mind. And therefore, now you understand why for relationships to happen, there has to be a high degree of maturity and selflessness in the relationship, because it is so easy to use power to your advantage. And unless you are self-correcting, wherein you correct yourself when you abuse your power, then it's so easy for you to take advantage of other people without knowing. Without knowing. Unless you are self-aware. If you are self-aware, then you say, oh, I think sometimes I would do that. If I'm wrong, I would apologize to my children.
Or your spouse.
Or my spouse. I don't know if I told you the story about my son, Josh. You know Josh, right?
Yes.
Our worship leader. I told him when he was a teenager, I told him, if somebody criticizes you, don't dismiss it off right away. I said, ask yourself the question, does the person have a point or not? In other words, is the person wrong or not? Because if the person is right, you should listen. If the person is wrong, just ignore. Okay? So one time when I was teaching him how to drive, we approached a yellow light, and I said, stop, 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 stop. That was my opinion. But he went through the yellow light. Okay? It was not red. He went through. He had a different judgment call than I did. But because I was the one teaching him, and I knew he wasn't as experienced, I felt he should be conservative. So I scolded him right there, and I said, you should have stopped. And you should have slowed down and stopped. And he didn't say anything. The following day, I thought, I think I was too harsh on my son. So I went to him and I said, you know, yesterday I was too hard on you when I was teaching you how to drive. I'm sorry. And he said to me, oh, it's okay, Dad. I'm used to you already. I said, wow, this kid is taking my advice. He's ignoring me. If he thinks I'm wrong, he's ignoring me. But my point is sometimes there's differences of opinion, and they're not exactly wrong or right. They're just different. And we have to allow for that. But anyway, so the exercise of your rights should not be harmful to others, and the exercise of their rights should not be harmful to you. In a perfect world, that's supposed to be the case. But we live in a broken world, unfortunately. Let me share to you a verse from James 4, 1-4. This is what it says. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? Okay, that's selfish human nature. That's the root cause of all the conflicts in the world. You desire, but you do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. Again, I'm not listening to God. I think my perspective is the right one. Okay. So, when you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. You adulterous people, don't you know that friendship with the world means enmity with God? Why is that? Why is friendship with the world enmity with God? Because the world is identified as that world system that has said, we can do this without God. It set itself apart from God. It's not relying on God. It's not trusting in God. It's not listening to God. It's not depending on God. In the Bible, in the Greek, it's called cosmos. It's just that world superstructure that has positioned itself as independent of God. Okay. So don't be surprised. The world is really like that. Therefore, anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God. Why? Because the world has already identified itself to be independent of God. But you can never see the whole elephant if you don't listen to God, because God is the only one who sees the whole elephant. That's why the world, no matter how much it tries, could not achieve world peace. That was the whole purpose of United Nations, but how much have they, they've done some good, but you know, it's an imperfect world. Okay. Well, the world superstructure, yes. Yes, because the problem is not out there, the problem is in here. Man by nature would look at his own personal interest and see his own point of view. Just like the six blind men trying to describe the elephant, they see one perspective, their own. And if they are in a position of power, they will use it. Okay. So, how do you maintain healthy boundaries? Well, here's a few principles for you to ponder on. First of all, you are responsible for everything you do, think, feel, and want. Okay? You're responsible. Yeah. You're responsible for all the consequences of your thoughts, feelings, and actions. So if you do good, then you will benefit from it. If you don't do good, then you should have some consequences that go with it. You do not need to offer an explanation to justify your behavior. In other words, I don't have to convince you that I'm right. That's all this is trying to say. I don't have to convince you that I'm right. Why? Because I can't convince everybody to see my point of view. And you don't have to. As long as you know the reasons for your points of view, but you have to be self-aware. If you're not self-aware, then you may make immature decisions, and then you realize later on they're wrong decisions. Next, you are not responsible for how others feel, think, feel, or act. Let them be responsible for themselves. Why is this important? Especially those of you who have children. As your children are growing, they have to learn how to be adults and to think and process truth and reality for themselves. If you keep bailing them out of the problems they get themselves into, they will not learn responsibility. That's what this is mean, what this is talking about, what this means. Besides, how can you be responsible for the actions of other people? You have no control over it. Right? So how can you be responsible for something that somebody else decided? It's okay to change your mind, especially when you realize you're wrong. Because oftentimes decisions are not just one time, one point decisions. Sometimes you go through a process of decision making and you may eventually decide to change your mind. And it's okay for you to change your mind, especially if you realize, hey, I was wrong. Some people, even though they're wrong and they realize they're wrong, hold on to their position. Because of pride. They don't want to admit that they're wrong. Hey, there's no shame to admit that you're wrong. As long as you realize that, hey, my decision was wrong. So now I'm making a right decision. But you have to be self-aware in order for that to work. You have to be biblically minded. And you have to be, as you move closer and closer to God, you become more and more like him, and you start making better and better decisions.
Maybe that's why Paul said, put on the mind of Jesus.
There you go. There you go. That would be a process that all of us will be doing for the rest of our lives. You never get there. That's why this next one says, it's okay to be imperfect. because none of us are perfect, but we are in the process of being sanctified and becoming more and more like Jesus. So even if you're not perfect, don't be too hard on yourself. But understand that you're not going to be perfect, not in this lifetime. So the goal, really, of a healthy individual is not perfection. It's growth. You have to be constantly growing and improving. But perfection as a goal is not attainable because you can't become perfect in this lifetime. But you can grow. That one could be an achievable goal. And you can feel good about yourself if you're growing as a person. If you're the same person as you were 20 years ago, you're in trouble. You have to be constantly growing. Yes. Let me just finish this and then I'll... It's okay to admit you're wrong, okay? It's okay to say, I don't know. Sometimes we feel shame in not being able to have all the answers. It's okay if you don't have all the answers. You don't have to, and nobody's requiring you to be all knowledgeable. When others do good things to you, it's okay not to give yourself up to pay them back. What does this mean? It means that if some people do you a favor or gives you a gift, does you a favor, sometimes they expect something back in return. And those are favors with a hook. Unfortunately, those are forms of manipulation. Very subtle, but it is. Some people have probably done it to you. You may have done it to other people. But that's human nature. But a person with a good boundary would be able to say, I don't think that's right. And even if I owe you one, I'm not going to do it. It's as simple as that. And you should be able to refuse if you don't think it's right or if you don't think it's right for you or the people that you love. You don't have to give yourself up to be loved by others. What does this mean? Sometimes, even though it disagrees with us or even though we don't think it's right, we do it just so that people will love and appreciate us. You know, you don't have to be a different kind of person if that's not you. Just so that people will like you. And this is where peer pressure comes in, okay? Especially for young people, peer pressure is very important. Why? Because it's important for them to be accepted by their peers. But sometimes it's not just teenagers who experience peer pressure. We adults experience it all the time as well. Sometimes there's a need to conform to what a church community asks you to do, even though it may not be the right thing to do. I've seen it happen. You know, when I was pastoring a Filipino church, there are dysfunctional aspects of the culture which sometimes goes contrary to biblical values. But oftentimes what wins out is the culture rather than the biblical values. And everybody goes along with the culture because that's what's accepted. I'll give you an example, okay? Talking back to parents and saying your point of view. Is that good or is not good? Okay, what's your tone? Exactly, what's your tone? What attitude is it being given? It's always good to be respectful, but in my culture, at least when I was growing up, You never talk back to your parents. Even if you had a good, solid, valid point, you don't answer back to your parents. And it's a culture of suppression. Even if your parents are wrong, or clearly wrong, you don't tell your parents they're wrong. So there are good aspects of that, in that, you know, you respect your elders. But the downside is, what if your elders are wrong? What do you do? And it's not acceptable for you socially to question your parents or question their decisions. So sometimes culture goes contrary to what the Bible tells us is the right thing to do. And that's why you have to navigate it very carefully. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. It's okay to be illogical in making decisions. Many faith decisions are illogical. When I resigned my high-paying job to become a pastor, everybody thought I was crazy. It was an illogical decision. But I did it anyway. So sometimes you may be deemed illogical by the world because you're making a faith decision. But just because people don't understand it doesn't make it illogical. It makes perfect sense from a faith point of view. It just doesn't make sense from a worldly point of view. So it's okay, even if people don't agree with you and think you're illogical. It's okay to say, I don't understand. Doesn't excuse you from trying to understand. But if you don't understand, say, can you say that again? I don't understand exactly what you're saying. Can you clarify that for me? Okay. Don't react right away, you know. Just seek clarification. It's okay to say, I don't want to get involved. And again, this may sometimes be cultural. In my culture, we have what we call, if two people don't get along, they will pull in a third party into their conflict. It's called triangulation. And people do that all the time. And you have a right to say, oh, I don't want to get sucked into your problems. No, there are times when that's appropriate, when you have to intervene. But if you don't want to, you have a right to say, count me out.
That third person should always be the Lord Jesus.
Yes. In principle, that's the way it's supposed to be. But unfortunately, when people are immature, they also have an idea of what the Lord Jesus wants. That's selfish and self-serving. So, and it's okay to say, I don't care, especially when you say, I don't care what other people say. Their opinions are not biblical. But sometimes people's opinions can have put pressure, it can put pressure on us. That's why I told my son, hey, if you think people are wrong, just ignore them. Don't react, just ignore. So he did. He ignored me. Smart guy. Because I was clearly wrong. So.
And hard for you to say anything about that.
Yeah. And it's okay to agree to disagree. Okay. You don't have to be right or to win every argument. There are people who are just geared towards winning every argument and proving themselves right all the time. And it's very hard to get along with people who always has to win every argument and think that they're always right. Now, any questions so far? Okay, let's move on. We can ask questions later. Let's look at the objective of conflict resolution. The objective of conflict management is not to avoid conflict, it's to resolve conflict. Conflicts is a given. You're going to have disagreements with people. Your goal is not to make it escalate into a full-blown argument. If you disagree with somebody, hey, it's okay to agree to disagree, but let's talk about the issues and let's clarify. So the objective is not to avoid conflict. The objective is to resolve conflicts. And it's not necessarily true that just because you don't have conflicts is that your relationship is healthy. Because a lot of dysfunctional relationships don't have conflicts. One person is right and the other person is always wrong. That's a dysfunctional relationship, but they have no conflict. Because one is passive, one is aggressive. By the way, that's what we're going to talk about next week. It's the different styles of reactions and responses to other people. And we're going to talk about managing your responses. So what is the goal of conflict management? The goal of communication is clarity. A major factor in resolving conflict is communication. And the goal of communication is not necessarily agreement, it's clarity. In the Bible, you have the story of the rich young ruler, wherein he went to Jesus and said, what does a person do to inherit eternal life? He said, oh, this is, and he said, oh, I'm all of that. Oh, yeah, but one thing you lack, go and sell everything you have, give to the poor, and come follow me. And he said, oh, I don't know if I can do that. And Jesus affirmed him because he made an informed decision. He clarified it. He didn't agree with Jesus, but he clarified it. I say, oh, is that exactly what that means? Okay, now it's up to me to decide whether I can accept those terms or not. He knew that Jesus was asking him for everything. And Jesus actually affirmed him for making an informed decision. And it's quite possible that later on in life, he may decide and say, I guess Jesus is right. I'm going to follow him. But Jesus didn't force him. But he understood exactly what Jesus demanded and expected of him. But it was his right to make, and his decision to make, whether he would follow Jesus or not. It was not because he was pressured by it, but it was because he wanted to make the decision, an informed decision for himself. So the goal is clarity. You understand exactly what the conflict is about, and what the issue is about. A lot of conflicts really stem from the issue not being the issue. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. Sometimes conflict may be about right or wrong. Two people, they're arguing, like the one I showed you earlier, they're arguing about the Wi-Fi. Well, one of them is right and one of them is wrong. Sometimes it's just as clear as that. The other person is just out of touch with this reality. And he thinks, oh, if it's coming out of the walls of your unit, then it's free for all, and it should be free for all. Give me your password. From his point of view, he was sincerely right. He sincerely believed that he had an argument there. But of course, he's wrong. Even the law doesn't agree with him. And the other guy who's paying for it says, how, what? He couldn't understand what his logic was. So sometimes it's very clear, one is right, one is wrong. But oftentimes, one is partially right and partially wrong, and the other is partially right and partially wrong as well. So you have to clarify in what areas you're right, in what areas you're wrong. And that requires a high level of self-awareness to be able to admit that, yeah, I'm wrong there, so I'm sorry. It takes a lot of maturity to be able to say those words, I'm sorry. Now, some conflicts may be just about differences. In other words, it's not about right or wrong, it's just different. Where should we eat tonight? Oh, I want to eat at Vietnamese pho. I want Vietnamese pho. Oh, I don't like Vietnamese pho. I like steak. So who's wrong and who's right? Neither one of them is wrong or right. It's just a difference of preferences. So what should they do in order for them to agree and get along? Some nights you eat at Vietnamese pho. Other nights you eat steak.
Well, now they have these places where you have...
Yeah, you can have both. Yeah, some places you can have both. You just put it all together, you know. And that's where compromise comes in, you know, because you're not always going to get what you... You know, a lot of happy marriages I see to be like this. He doesn't get all he wants, but he gets some of it. She doesn't get all that she wants, but she gets some of it. And when you consider everything, they're both happy. They're not totally happy, but at least they both have a relatively high degree of happiness, and it's fine. You know, they get along. You get into conflicts when one always insists that we should eat Vietnamese pho all the time, or we should eat steak all the time. Then you have problems. Or when you're eating steak and you like Vietnamese pho, you're sulking. You know? And you're passive-aggressive the whole time. You know? Then you've got problems. The absence of conflict may not mean the relationship is healthy, and I shared that, right? Sometimes there may be no conflict. It doesn't mean it's always healthy. Maybe someone is being passive, but you know, it doesn't always work when you're passive, because you eventually become passive-aggressive. Because you're not happy, and it will somehow come out one way or another. Have you ever heard of the story about the husband and wife who had an argument, and the husband won the argument? And the wife, because the wife is passive, just kept quiet. But in the morning, when she served him his toast, it was burnt. That's the classic definition of passive aggressive. Okay. In any disagreement, you need to distinguish between two major concerns. One is the issue, and the other is process. Okay? Healthy conflict resolution needs to, one, resolve the issue with a biblical course of action following an appropriate biblical process. I give you an example, okay? As Christians, we believe that abortion is wrong, okay? But if you go bomb an abortion clinic, that's not right too. You may have got the issue right, but the process that you used is wrong, okay? Say someone is wrong. Let's say your child is wrong, okay? They're insisting on having their way, and no, I don't want to go to church. No, we're going to church. And then they throw a tantrum, okay? So what do? You shame them. You shame your child. Now, is that good? No good. Okay, so the process is wrong, shaming. You're right in telling your child, we should go to church. The issue is correct. You got the issue right, but the process is wrong. You're ramming down your values onto your children. And that's not right. They should own their values. You should reason with them and try to persuade them to understand why it's important to go to church. Because a child will always see the world like this. Why? Because they're children. They only see very limited. Their perspective of the world is very limited. You're an adult, your perspective of the world should be like this. Why? Because you're older and you see more. But how to explain that to your child? Now, that's a matter of upbringing. Any questions so far?
Pastor Vince?
Yes.
We should admit when we're wrong, but what if we say, I was wrong, but you were wrong too?
Yeah. You know, that's a classic question, okay? Because I've seen in marital counseling, I've seen couples say, I admit I was wrong, and then they're waiting for the spouse to say, oh, I know, and I was wrong too, and then they kiss and make up. You know, that's the ideal, it's supposed to be. But I've seen it happen where they say, I admit I'm wrong, and then they're waiting for the spouse to say the same thing, and it never happens. And you've got problems. Oh boy. Let me tell you. Let me tell you this, because I'm sharing from experience. I've had people come to me for marriage counseling, and what they want is not really marriage counseling. They want somebody to agree with them and tell their spouse that they're wrong. So they want to suck me into their dysfunction so that I will agree. You're right. You should listen to him. You should listen to her. And that's when a lot of the conflicts, and I'm going to end with this actually, but let me just say it now. The problem with conflicts is when people don't want to be held accountable. That's where relationships break down. You tell somebody, hey, you know, you can't keep doing that. Okay, I'll do it. And never does it. Doesn't want to be held accountable. So now they ask the pastor, you have to hold the other person accountable. And the other person doesn't want me to hold. I mean, I tell you, I've been in situations where I say, no, don't do that. Don't call your wife that. No, don't do that. Don't do that to your husband. Okay. And then they do it anyway. I said, I told you not to do that. But he's being very critical or whatever. Or she's being mean and disrespectful, whatever. So they always have a justification for hitting below the belt. And when you hit below, you know, when you have a boxing match and you hit below the belt, what happens? Disqualified. You're disqualified. There's consequences. When there are no consequences, then a person feels very powerful because they're not accountable and nobody can hold them accountable. And a person who's dysfunctional and cannot be held accountable is a problem. I call them porcupines. Because nobody wants to be close to a porcupine. Anyway, that's a sidetrack. Okay, let's talk about issues. Okay, how do you discern issues? Okay. Say you have a conflict between two people. Say they're married, or husband and wife, or whatever. And the issue that they're arguing about is either he or she is late for an appointment, they don't agree on who's paying for expenses. Oh, you know, if you want Vietnamese food, I'll go with you, but you have to pay. You know, so they don't agree. Or they have conflicting plans, or somebody gives a careless comment, or I told you to put away your things, and they don't put away their things, and they say, yeah, I'll do it, and never does it. Or they forgot their anniversary. No, that's a killer. Or, you know, you're always telling me what to do. You know, you're so bossy, you always keep telling me what to do. Oh, you didn't turn off the lights again. You know, something as little as that, you know? I mean, you argue about that. I'm not minimizing it. Somebody has to turn off the light. It doesn't turn off. Oh, no, now it does. You just say, Alexa, turn off the light. You know. You don't have to depend on your spouse to do it for you. You know, you didn't return your stuff. Hey, you got my stuff and you didn't put it back. You know, where's the salt? Where's the salt? Where's the pepper? Nobody knows where it is. Where did you put it? So those are what I call surface issues, you know. But usually the issue is not the issue. Sometimes there's a deeper issue behind it. Sometimes really the comment or the action is really caused by some unresolved pain in the past. And that's why it's kind of triggering that cutting remark cuts really deep. Why? It's because that's what your mom called you and it hurt you. That's what your dad called you and it hurt you. Now your spouse is calling you that and it hurts you. So it's called transference. Whatever negative feelings you had for your parents, you transfer to your spouse. Why? Because your spouse reminds you of your mother or your father. So it may be caused by a deeper personal hurt and pain, but you don't know it. You're just reacting. Or again, it may be a family of origin dysfunction. Like I was the youngest in our family. Nobody listened to me. I had the least vote in the family. So every time that happens to me as an adult, I get upset. I had to get over it, you know. I had to learn how to deal with that. But before, if my spouse would do that to me, I would overreact. I said, why are you overreacting? I just said something. You know? So I had, and by the way, that's on me. I was like that even before I met my spouse. I had those issues even before I met my spouse. My spouse has got nothing to do with it. I was already damaged even before I met her. And I had to take personal responsibility for my own healing. Because she cannot heal me. She cannot be my therapist. And you know who's the best therapist of all? God. Last week I talked about laments, right? When you lament, you're actually making God your therapist. You're saying, God, I can't stand this anymore. You know, David would say, how I wish you would destroy all my enemies. You know, I wish they're all dead. And he was lamenting towards God. God was becoming his therapist. And then after he had unburdened himself to God, he feels better. Saying, yeah, I was wrong, God. You know, search me, O God, and know my heart. See if there's any wicked way in me. And lead me into life everlasting. See, he's allowing God to be his therapist. Could be low self-esteem issues. You may be going through work stress. Sometimes some people, when they're having stress at work, they bring it at home. Ideally, you shouldn't be bringing it home, because if you do, trouble. Why? Because people at home, your children, your spouse, has got nothing to do with your work stress. They can't affect it. They're not responsible for it. They can't solve it. They can't do anything about it, and yet you dump it on them. It may be because of your fears and anxieties that you've had even before you had children or before you met your spouse. It could be because you're dealing with past rejections. These are all personal issues. I'm just giving examples. There's tons of them. Some people may have addictions or addictive behaviors. And addiction is not just to substance abuse. There are other kinds of forms of addiction. Many, many forms of addiction. What does addiction do for us? Addictions are like anesthetics. I think I mentioned this last time. They're anesthetics. They make us forget our pain, but only temporarily. It's sometimes people choose that because it has an immediate effect. It makes you forget your pain right away. But then afterwards, it snowballs on you, and so you're back to where you started and even worse. That's why gambling ruins a lot of people. You say, gambling doesn't make sense. Why do you do it? It's because they get a sense of relief from it. For a short period of time, they have that exhilarating feeling. It's like a rush, an adrenaline rush. But then afterwards, when you're losing and you've lost all your money and lost your shirt, then it hits you and you're even worse off than when you started. Some people have been feeling disregarded or devalued. They have issues with their past relationships. And that's the reason why people who get married, and these statistics in the United States, people who in their first marriages have a 50% chance of success. In the United States, 50% of marriages, the rate of divorce is 50%. The rate of second time divorce is 70%. It's even higher. Why? Because you bring your baggage from your previous marriage into your new marriage. So unless you're able to resolve those problems, you bring them into your new relationship. And that's the problem. That's why the divorce rate is even higher. A person may be emotionally blocked because they've been hurt so many times. A person may even be experiencing PTSD. And mind you, PTSD is not just a war issue. It's not just because you went to war, then you're experiencing PTSD. Any traumatic experience can cause you to experience PTSD. And some people have been abused when they were young or earlier in life, and they do experience the symptoms of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Some people have racial bias, which they've picked up somewhere. Some people may have grown up in poverty, and that has caused them to see the world in a different way. Some people have unresolved anger that they may have been able to mask but not eliminate. You can control anger a variety of ways. You can have high discipline and not express anger. You know how it is when your boss is scolding you and you're just smiling like that? Yeah, you're right. But deep down inside your mind, you want to hit him? You know? So some people, through discipline, are able to mask their emotions. But you can only mask it so much. At a certain point, it will cause you so much internal turmoil, it will cause you stress, and it will come out in some kind of physical illness. Loss and grief, some people who've gone through tremendous loss, they lose somebody that they love. You know, sometimes you just have to give them some slack because they may just be going through a rough time and you have to give them grace. So I can go on and on, okay? But you get the idea. Sometimes the issue is not the issue. Maybe something else is going on. Surface issues can be resolved in a timely manner, okay? For example, I've seen husband and wife, couples fight, and say, he didn't do the dishes. And they fight over that. They want to divorce because he didn't do the dishes. If that was the only issue, great. Hire somebody to do the dishes for you. That would solve your problem. But that's not the issue. The issue goes deeper. And hiring somebody to solve that problem of washing the dishes, something else will come up. He didn't fold his clothes. He didn't do the bed. It will be something. Why? Because it's a deeper issue. It's not just washing the dishes. No, the divorce is caused by something deeper. So personal issues are deeply rooted and takes longer to resolve and may need intervention. Sometimes counseling is needed in order for a person to find out where the issue really lies. And here's where the searching light of the Holy Spirit comes in really well. It's when you're honest with the Holy Spirit, you're honest to God, just like King David in Psalm 139, he says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. See if there be any wicked way in me." You're asking God to search all your stuff and your baggage. Unless we do that, it's going to remain beneath the surface and your dysfunction will stay with you. It won't go away. When you cook soup and you put a lot of stuff in the soup, you put ground beef, you put noodles, you put tomatoes and carrots, it all stays in the bottom. The moment it boils, then all that's in the bottom goes to the top. And sometimes God turns up the heat in our lives because we think we're okay. No, you're not okay. There's many things beneath the surface that will only come up when God turns up the heat and brings us through a trial. Then we realize, oh, there's a lot of brokenness in me. Why? Because you see it come to the surface. And then God shows you, you need to deal with that. You need to forgive that. You need to let go of that. You need to get over that. And then God brings it all to the surface, and then you realize, yes, God, I surrender it to you. And we're going to talk about that in not next Sunday, but the Sunday after, how to deal with those issues. What's really the root cause of the conflict? That's the question we need to ask. The issue may not be the issue. It only triggered a past issue that's unresolved. And so I tell people, hey, you know, if you are having conflict with someone, it may not be about you. When people respond aggressively, try to help the person determine its cause. It may not be about you. Do not take it personally. Some of my personal issues were there even before I met my wife. So it's got nothing to do with her. She's just the recipient of my dysfunction. But it's got nothing to do with her. And so some of that may not be about you. And instead of taking it personally, because if you take it personally, then it's about you. Then it becomes your problem. Conflicts are not resolved when the problem is not the problem and the issue is not the issue. Because you lack clarity. When we deal with the unresolved personal issues, the source of the problem can be addressed and conflicts can have some resolution. Why? It's because you're dealing with the root cause of what's causing you to think, feel, and act a certain way. And here's the problem, okay, with some healing processes. If it deals with just, let's say, gambling, okay? If you just try to deal with the gambling problem, then okay, he doesn't gamble anymore. But then what does he do? He starts drinking. He just replaces it with something else. Why? Because the root cause of what's causing him to gamble has never been addressed. So it just finds its way out some other way. You have to go to the root cause of what's causing your dysfunctional behavior and destructive behavior, and then you can have some resolution. Why does God hate your sin? Is it because he's a killjoy? No. God hates sin because he loves you. And sin, by definition, is destructive behavior. And he doesn't want you to destroy your life. Our dysfunctional behavior would destroy our lives. We have them. All of us have them. There's not one person on earth who doesn't have them. And that's why when we allow Jesus to continuously redeem us and sanctify us, we're allowing the healing of our soul. And when your soul continuously heals, you become a better and more healthy individual. And you're a nicer person to be around with. And that's going to take a lifetime to do. And which, by the way, is what spiritual formation is about. You need to be able to develop a process within you whereby God can speak into your life personally. I'll tell you an example, okay? When I trained to become a spiritual director, because I took up spiritual direction, and I'm a certified spiritual director, they taught us how to meditate. They gave us the dynamics of prayer and all that, meditation. And they said, okay, go up the mountains. We were up there in the mountains and everything. Go up the mountains and stay there and talk to God for 3 hours. Okay. In 30 minutes, I was done. I said, what am I going to do in the next 2.5 hours? I was done. I was done praying. I've done all that I can. I prayed to God. So I said, I have to spend another 2.5 hours here. That's what they required us to do. And then later on, I realized why they asked us to do that. You see, God doesn't show up at the time and place you want. God only shows up if you give him time and space in your life. But if you're saying, oh, I've got my list, and I'm going to pray this, 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 this. Okay, I prayed through all my list. I'm done. What happened? What just happened? You talked to God. Did you give him time to talk to you? No. Is that a conversation? No, it's one way. So they asked us and said, spend 3 hours up there in the mountains with God. So the next 2.5 hours, I was just doing nothing. But I didn't know that I was giving time and space for God to speak to me. So then I looked at, then I noticed, oh, look at the grass. Oh, yeah, you know, look at the grass from the field. Oh, look at the birds of the air. I noticed the birds flying. Look at the birds of the air. They don't have any worry in the world, you know, just like what Jesus said. And all of a sudden, God started talking to me in the things that I was seeing. But if I had stood up after 30 minutes, I would never have seen that and been able to appreciate all of that. God was talking to me, but I had to give him time and space. Okay. Oh, looks like we've run out of time. Sorry. You could read Ephesians 4 on your own and find out where the hostility is coming from. Determine who's responsible for the issues. If it's not your responsibility, you can't solve it. You have a right to say stop. You have a right to ask, when do we discuss the issue? Because sometimes you say stop, then they're avoiding the issue. You have a right to ask for a mediator if the person doesn't want to be held accountable. You have a choice how to respond and be affected. You do not have to retaliate and get even. To resolve conflict, deal with the personal issues, not just the surface issues. Personal issues are beneath the surface and they hide from you. Avoid making never and always statements. You know, that always will, that'll get you. Avoid you statements. Practice making I statements. I feel this because this. I'll give you an example. Instead of saying to the person, you hurt me, tell them, I feel hurt. When you arrive late for our appointment, because I really value our time together. See how different that is? Because you're taking responsibility for your feelings. You're not saying, you hurt me, meaning you're responsible for my feelings. You're saying, I get hurt when you're doing this. So now you're taking responsibility for your fear. You're not blaming. Or I feel rejected when you brush off my feelings because I love you and it's important to me that we connect. There are always good and not good ways to say something, okay? Let me just share this video with you just to prove my point and then we're done. Listen to this, it's a very short video.
How do you professionally say, I don't care?
You could say, I'm not particularly concerned with that.
How do you professionally say, I don't like it?
You could say, it doesn't align with my preferences.
What about I like it?
It aligns well with my preferences. Or it meets my approval.
And how do you professionally say, I don't agree?
I understand that. However, we seem to have different perspectives.
What about I'm busy?
There are actually many advanced ways or professional ways to say I'm busy. You could say, I'm currently tied up. You could also say, I'm currently occupied. Or, I have a lot on my plate. Or, I have a full plate at the moment. Or you could also say, I'm currently engaged with something.
Follow for more.
Okay. So next time you have an argument with somebody, you just say, I understand that. But we seem to have a difference in perspective. Instead of saying, you're wrong. Okay, let's close in prayer. Lord, thank you so much for these things. I know there's a ton of things here to unpack, but you're our counselor. Teach us. And we're ready to listen. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you so much.